This journey is about listening to Father.
The promised land without the promise giver is not a promised land I want to live in.
Abandon your agenda and embrace mine.
But I do know He doesn't leave me. In the midst of whatever's going on, He's there. Whatever's going on, He's there.
I'm just glad God woke me up.
The ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast.
Oh, bad news.
What do you mean bad news?
Had my checkup with the doctor last night.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Did you cough?
Oh, yeah, that wasn't even the worst of it.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Going downhill. The old body's hit 54.
Oh, no.
We're on the downhill sling.
Trade it in.
I will at some point.
Get your new tent.
Hopefully not tomorrow.
Get your new glorified tent here.
Well, not here, but someday. Oh, boy, yeah, a little back issue, and I didn't know I had a little nerve damage problem thing, and my cholesterol's out of whack after holding steady for the last 10 years. Now it's kind of didn't go down. Let me see. Oh, so I've got a whole lot of new stuff to be aware of in my life, and, you know.
Are you happy that you know?
Not at the moment.
No?
I don't mind knowing. It's the changes I have to make in my life.
Oh, there you go. It's the ergo it means.
I have always eaten. I look at it. I've always eaten for fun.
For fun?
For fun. I've never thought about food as fuel, but that's the change we're making, to start seeing food as fuel. Not fun. And not that I still won't have some fun, because...
See, I got a little house of athletes. Food is fuel. We watch where the sugar burns off, and then all of a sudden, they can't make it through the next quarter. So we know food is fuel.
Oh, yeah, well, I know it's fuel, too, but what I eat about the fun. And so, yeah, this will be a growing edge. Not too excited about it, to be honest, but I guess it's good to know what's going on inside. It's been a couple of years since I had one of these kind of checkups. And
better to know than not know, because then you can do something about it, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll just need to encourage you in a couple of days, huh?
Call you? Probably about every 10 minutes, and right before dinner.
Are we having fun yet? Are we having fun yet?
Man.
Chewing on broccoli, are you?
I see more greens coming my way. Yeah,
chewing on broccoli stalks. There you go.
Greens for me is green Jell-O. That's how I do greens.
Oh, I can hear my children going, "Go, Wayne, go."
Which accounts for the blood test I recently had. But you know what? For a long time, it was holding steady. The numbers were fine. It was right in the window. We were good. And
all right.
Suddenly, we're not good.
All you personal trainers out there, let's come find Wayne.
No, please. I don't need 1,000 emails of what I should and shouldn't eat. No, I haven't got time for
that. Don't shit on yourself?
Yeah, don't do that to me. Plus, everybody's got an answer for something. I think the worst thing today, I have in our culture today, my friend had cancer. Everybody hears my friend has cancer has the remedy that works on everybody who's tried it, whether it's drinking this liquid or going to this clinic in Mexico or just whatever. You know, it's just, I think the worst thing to do is, you know, most of that stuff are anecdotal. Most of it may have worked for one person, but I don't want to.
All right.
I don't want to sift through all that. So
bring more veggies.
Yeah, don't. Now watch people cook for me on the road. No more chocolate cake.
You just punted it, dude. No more fun. Fuel.
And we're doing two back-to-back again because I'm on my way to Canada again. Third trip to Canada.
What's up with that?
You know what? It's that Swiss chalet chicken.
Like it?
Yeah, it's probably not my diet anymore, but I like it. No, I've had a great time.
Swiss chalet chicken?
Yeah, Canadians know what that is.
Okay.
And there's a killer chocolate dessert at Kelsey's, which is a grill kind of place. Kelsey's or Kelso's, I'm not sure which, but...
All right, heading north.
Love that stuff. So anyway, we're doing back-to-back again with the last one on freedom, so we'll continue here. And... yeah, I'll be in British Columbia this time, meeting with some groups I've never met, some folks I've met before. So it'll be a fun trip. Lots of folks kind of coming in from a range away to meet each other. So that'd be fun.
Wrong season to go skiing, but Whistler is awesome.
Also, yeah, I don't think it's time to ski yet.
I know.
And I don't ski anyway because that'd be a whole other back issue, which we don't want to get into. But, hey, I met some free rangers right here locally.
You did?
Last week. It was really fun.
Out on your lawn? Where?
gotten an email. No, I got an email from somebody in Simi Valley. Just said, hey, there's a group of us over here doing house church. And my mom, who lives way away somewhere, sent me a copy of The Naked Church and been reading it here. Flipped it over. See, you're in Oxnard, which it still has I'm in Oxnard on the back of that book. So she said, would you be open to sometime coming over to Simi Valley and meet with us? And so I wrote him back and said, hey, actually closer than you thought. And actually, Moore Park now, which is
already up the hill,
10 minutes away. So Sarah and I went over last Thursday night, and we had a ball.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be the kind of people I need to know right now, because total health food freak. There was spaghetti in every bit of there was vegetables in every bit of the spaghetti we ate. There was vegetables hidden everywhere. She told us about it.
There you go.
We won't be friends long, you and I can tell that, but we had a great time. It's a group of maybe 10, 11, 12, something like that, and plus kids. And they've been meeting together for a while. They come from a different tradition than I come from, and they've been kind of exploring house church option, but man, we really connected on sharing, get beyond that, get to who Jesus is and how we connect with him and some of the stuff on the cross, and never heard it before. Just had not.
For real?
Yeah. We had a ball. They just threw questions at Sarah and me for about 2 hours, and then they're going to have a barbecue volleyball game coming up. I said, I'm in. Just don't have it while I'm in Canada, because I'm in. I'm looking forward. These are great folks. These are people on a great journey, coming alive in some freedom, got some really neat hungers. They're 10 minutes down the road. It's kind of fun to see where that might go in our relationship to them. They're asking if we wanted to, you know, kind of be part of the group, and we're not looking for that. We're just looking for people to walk with. So let us know what you're doing. We'll hang out when we can. But right now, even Sarah and I, if we wanted to go to a weekly group, our schedule just doesn't allow it with the kinds of things we've got going on and people coming in. And heard from some old friends in yours last week from Calabasas, too. Left your club before you guys did, I guess. I can't remember the names of those. I'm sitting here.
And well, you have me curious.
I'll look it up after. All I actually have been in touch with you, but just said, hey, we just found your website and saw you doing some stuff with Brad Cummings. We knew him back at the old clubhouse. So, yeah, they said, hey, if you guys are hanging out, they're in Calabasas. If you guys hanging out anywhere, we want to join you. So
awesome.
Maybe some local stuff stirring. People getting some hunger to walk in some fellowship, which would be cool.
I think God's shuffling the deck here and there. I think it's great.
I hope so. Well, I put my foot in it this week.
What did you step in there, Wayne?
Oh, man. I was trying to just, you know, I've been in touch with a couple that about a year and a half ago became some free rangers. And they spilled out of a club that a friend of mine, he was a college kid when I was a pastor 25 years ago or longer. And now he's a pastor of his own, got this fellowship, and he spilled out of that, and I heard the backside of that story. Well, lo and behold, I get an email from the pastor guy.
And, oh, so you got both sides of this deal.
Well, I didn't get the other side of it. He just wrote me a note, just wanted to review something I had taught in a class 30-some years ago. I don't even know how people remember
that. Well, he remembered it. Must have been good.
He did. I was looking for some kind of resource thing. I said, hey, by the way, I mean, to hear from this guy, first time in 30 years or more, knowing the other couple, I'm going to be with them in about 3 weeks up in central California.
You put one and one together and said two.
I just wrote back and said, hey, yeah, I know a couple friends of yours. And, you know, it was all kind of positive. He wrote back, not friends of mine, not
Uh-oh.
Now.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I went, oh, boy, that's painful. So I wrote him back and just, hey, I know things get like that. People say things they later regret, blah, blah, blah. But, boy, he's just not regretting any of it. And he's... You know, he wrote me today, just, you know, don't really say I can talk about this with you because we don't really know each other. And I've submitted to my spiritual coverings, and they've all validated everything I am and everything I do. And he said something like that in the early one, not quite that dramatic. And I just said, you know, just because the power brokers of a denomination say, he wrote back, these are spiritual men well fitted for their positions. And so I'm not sure we're going to walk down that road.
You're messing with his little veils and stuff there, partner.
Yeah, I am. I don't mean to be. Except that I just wrote him, I said, you know what, this just real started because I love these people. I know they were some of your closest friends. I know you're now part. That's happened to me. And I just think our Father's about reconciliation, not about brokenness and division. And I wish somebody would have stepped in for us someday and didn't. So
you mean God doesn't just sit up in heaven and decide who's right and side with them?
He's counting. Counting the team. Wants to know how many's on his team and how many's on the other team.
But, I mean, isn't that wild, though? I mean, here you got a God, and we have been given, the Bible says, a ministry of reconciliation. That's not, like, you know, questionable. It's like, that's like direct quote in there. That's the ministry we've been given. And yet, so often the way it kind of gets played out is it's more important to be right and to have all your T's crossed, your I's dotted, than it is to be in relationship and loving.
Yeah. One of our elders said one time back when I was pastoring what was supposed to be an alternative community of house churches kind of thing that was fairly decent for a while and then went off tracks. We were being interviewed by a leadership journal, and they were interviewing some of our leadership to find out what we were doing. They asked him about some of that question. He said, you know what, we've discovered it's more important to be right with each other than to be right about an issue. Now, that's a great way to say it. It was important to be right with each other. That didn't last long.
What do you mean it didn't last long?
Well,
I think I understand that, but
we're now neither right on the issues nor right with each other. That same group of people is somewhat fragmented now, and the reason they're fragmented is we've talked about this with the Irish bunch who never did form a club, who 30 years later can say we've remained friends because we had nothing between us to fight over. They're convinced that if they had started a club 30 years ago, they would have probably split two or three times, and most likely all of them wouldn't be friends today. And I do think the overlay of a deep, think about this, the overlay of a deep personal friendship gets violated when somebody says, I'm not sure I'm buying into the priorities of this religious obligation thing we're into here. And I, you know, people are listening to us know exactly what we're talking about. Been there. I got close friends they worked with, feel betrayed by because, you know, they couldn't go along anymore. And there's this very narrow road I think we walk in these institutional things. I know with me at the end, what I was being offered from the elders of that thing, if I'll go along with this, man, you are our founding apostle. You are, I mean, they're talking about me like I'm next to godliness. Yeah. If you don't,
you're the devil.
Oh, and
we'll roast you.
Yeah, and all it doesn't have anything to do with me, because I'm neither one of those. I'm not the devil, and I'm not the grand poobah, either one. But what's that being based on is, am I conforming to the expectation wanted of me or not? If not, I'm disruptive, unsubmitted, and I think that's what makes the system of religious obligation a very dangerous place to live, because you're not, again, we're talking about freedom in the last few podcasts, you're not free to be real. You're not free to ask the questions you need to ask, to notice what you need to notice, to struggle with what you need to struggle with. Everything is measured by, are you adding to our growth and security and our appearance as a group, or are you distractive to that or disruptive to that? And then relationships always get sacrificed first.
Yeah, to me, it's profoundly confusing when you step back and look at it from this vantage point of going like, and what is the justification we really provide for choosing to, quote, be right and to, you know, here's my principle, and then excusing my unwillingness to love? Because it's sort of in that. It's like, I love my rule, my thought, my thing more than I'm going to love this person. And it's sort of like, this justifies not doing that. You know, it's like, because you're wrong, I don't have to love you. You're wrong. And it's like, now, where in the pages of the Bible does it say we get to love those who are, we don't have to love those who are wrong? And it's like, it's just, I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be tough to find it there.
And I think it's like, gosh, there is that fundamental challenge that, you know, it's like, how can you say you know God and hate your brother? Well, the God of your rules will reinforce your hating your brother who doesn't agree with your rules.
Yeah.
But the God who is kind of like, I mean, when my kids are scrapping, most of the time I didn't hear the original scrap. I don't know who fired first. I just know we're in the downward spiral of retaliation.
Yep.
And my main goal isn't trying to find out who's right or wrong. Almost always my main goal is, now let's step back here and let's look at how are we loving each other. Because if I wasn't an eyewitness to what's going on, there is no way I'm going to be, they both saw it differently, but he, and there's no way I'm going to be able to unravel that.
You don't make them kiss and make up as kind of a pretend thing, do you?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
You make it tell it's real.
We do.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, you can tell when someone's spirit is closed. Don't touch me. I mean, it's really easy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like, it's really easy. It's like the hug test. It's like, unless you're ready to actually re-embrace, our heart isn't open again, and we need to get it open, because it's not helpful to have it closed. It can get locked that way.
Yep.
And it just, it's fun to be able to just go like through the sheer over and over of daddy painstakingly going like, no, we're family. We are going to love each other, and we're going to figure out, gosh, why right now do I feel justified in my hatred? Because it's not justifiable. So let's unravel that, and let's reorient to the fact that, you know what? I'm sorry. I mean, we all have the capacity to misinterpret each other.
I just have the capacity. I think we do regularly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's like, in the midst of all that, the goal, if it's trying to decide who's right, you're going to have a trail of broken relationships forever. If the goal, if the ministry we've been given is of reconciliation, then the issue is finding new ground of appreciation and how can I express my love. And you got to let go of the other stuff. And I just find my heart gets lighter in the letting go of it.
And you've got to put the relationship first. Somehow that has to be more important
than anything else.
And as a father of adult kids, I'm telling you, the greatest joy I have, kids are all over Sunday watching some football, hanging out. There is no greater joy I have than watching my adult kids relate to each other as friends. Interested in each other's lives, jokes, you know, private jokes, and stuff they've got, inside stuff, and just years of being together. My kids, the last probably 5-6 years they were in our household, I don't think they knew they had a brother or sister. They really just...
separate worlds.
Yeah, just no animosity, no anger, just on different pages about everything. And we weren't sure they knew that they weren't only children, both of them, when they left for college. You know, you had a brother? No, really? They have since...
what was his name?
Since college, they've just become wonderful, wonderful friends. And I know for Sarah and me, being able to sit in our home and watch our kids relate to each other, or know that our kids are together hanging out doing something, and my son with my son-in-law, there is just no greater joy as a parent. And I project that a bit on God. I can't imagine that one of his greatest joys is watching his kids get along and being, you know, somehow touched by the fact that they're not. And I don't mean everybody has to be good friends with everybody. It's just crazy. It's not going to happen. But when good friends on the journey get split up, broken up because of something that happened, I just think that's a tragedy. We've got, and I know it takes two sides to reconcile that. I realize that. I've got a couple of those relationships that are still open in my life that it was much closer at one time than it is today.
Uh-huh.
And hope that, but I don't know that I ever want to lose Father's heart for reconciliation, even with people that I considered myself a close friend with, would still say, love them deeply. The friendship doesn't work now at all, because it's not a friendship. It's been overlaid with other things. But always staying open to say, God, if there's anything I can do, any way you want to bring us back together, that's my heart.
So what do you do for the person who, I mean, like, I'm just thinking of the pastor that kind of gave a little bit of a smarting response to what was kind of an innocent attempt at going like, well, gosh, two estranged people both crossing my path, maybe I am in the role of peacemaker. I can help here. Maybe bridge two broken relationships back together. And then he gave you a pretty smarting response. What do you say to the person who really feels like they were sinned against, this hasn't been owned, and they kind of feel justified in their offense? I mean, it's pretty hard to get those people out, and when you start talking about reconciliation, I think they glaze over going like, nah, they did me wrong, and they meant to, and they're not repentant, and they don't see any way of coming back together. I know the value you're talking about, yeah. But I think the only people who's going to be struggling with this right now are people who are like, well, I got one of those.
Yep.
And you know, you talk about it in a generic sense, they might be able to go down the road with us, but you talk about it in the specific sense of that person that hurt you in that area, you want to get reconciled with them today? Well, I think that becomes a little different for most of us in that moment where you're like, well, where do you go there?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm saying You know, it's everybody shut off your iPod and go find your worst enemy and make them your friend again. Because I do think reconciliation is something God does. And there's a time and a place and work he does to bring that to bear. I guess what I'm saying is to have the heart for reconciliation, not just to write off a friendship, particularly a close one, because something got broken. We talked about this before. Forgiveness is a unilateral act. I can, if you've betrayed me, hurt me, I can forgive you without you ever seeing, acknowledging it, or dealing with it. Reconciliation, I deal with this with bridge builders all the time, how to bring two estranged parties together. That does take honesty. It takes understanding both of each other's story, even if it's not your story, and finding a third story that makes sense of what happened and people owning things they did that were hurtful and owning responsibility. Mean, the process of reconciliation, I think, is a huge process. I just don't think it's as easy as, okay, I'm just going to treat you like my friend now, particularly if you've been betrayed and if you've been hurt and if you've been. But I do think forgiveness is the first step in that process somehow with God. I've got to sort out what it is to get my foot off their throat, and so I don't have that, you know, churning thing in my gut whenever their name comes up or I see them across the store. I think that's critical. And then there's just that openness to reconciliation if God opens the door. I know somebody wrote me today and said, hey, I was just with somebody that knows you really well and says he misses your friendship, and maybe we could all get together. I'd at least knock on the door to see what was happening, because I'd love to see it happen. But it's been 12 years. I'm not sitting here every day going, boy, I've got to reconcile that to make God happy. It isn't that kind of a deal. It is just that constant, like you said, we are part of a kingdom that has the ministry of reconciliation, being reconciled to God and being reconciled to each other. And if we just keep a heart for that, I think we'll see ways in which God works that may allow that to happen. If we're close to that, then it's just going to keep going around the hill and around the tree until someday we see.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think of what is the one proof that all of this is true that Jesus sort of tossed out, that the world would be able to go, there's proof that this is all true,
yeah,
that you'd love one another. I mean, that's what he said in John. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, if you have love one for another, then the world's going to know that this whole thing is true. Ergo, if you don't, it's going to be a massive question mark as to how is any of this real?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you look at the whole religious landscape, the proliferation of denominations is one broken relationship after another. And it's not as if God hasn't brought forth perhaps valuable things and highlighted different truths that needed to be, you know, understood and brought. I mean, there's things that, but you go back and it's like, gosh, we have such a broken road.
Absolutely.
And this religious trail. And you're just going like, gosh, this does seem a bit contradictory.
And I think it's part of the problem of having all these cages for people to fit into. And if you fit in my cage, we get to quote unquote love each other. And if you no longer fit here or you go somewhere else, then I feel betrayed in the relationship. I remember people leaving the fellowship I pastor. I felt betrayed every time. Why aren't you here? Why are you leaving us? Why? You could add so much more to this. I took a lot of that personally, and it wasn't healthy. It wasn't healthy at all. It was very, very destructive. And I think we've got this ongoing track record that just keeps fragmenting, and yet every person who dies, their last breath almost always has to deal with how valuable relationships are. People who, you know, were in those burning towers in 9/11, and cell phones were alive with, I love you, I miss you, I know I didn't spend enough time with you. All the regrets have always to do with relationships. John Wimber, the guy started the Vineyard deal, and I mean, he got thrown out of Calvary Chapel because they were healing and we're Bible people, and then he had to throw people out because they weren't doing exactly the way the Vineyard does people. And yet, at the end of his life, after having a stroke and some other stuff, he just said to the people closest to him, "It's just about loving each other. That's all it is." But how do you do that when you've got this
empire that's being built?
Yeah, it can be a little imp. It can be a little cage or a big cage. When you've got conformity and people got to look alike and somehow what you do impacts me and reflects on me, that's the world teaches us to use people. And I think the scripture you just gave us, what the world's going to be, not because we go around hug each other and say, oh, I love you, I love
one
you.
One big warm fuzzy.
I love with you. It is that people will live alongside each other, not for their own self-interest, but to put the relationship first.
Yeah.
And their personal care for the other. At least put their needs, as Paul wrote in Philippians, on par with your own. Not just looking out for your own needs, not just getting what you need. I think this is a real demonstration how love works out in us. I don't think it's, here's a new set of things, agenda to add to our life. We just need to go out and reconcile everybody. But I do think the more we capture the sense of God's love and reconciliation with us, the more we see that and want to share that with other people.
See, what brings about reconciliation, I think, is the revelation of that love is there. I mean, we had a little thing over the weekend, and I have no idea how it happened, but all of a sudden, I got one of my children is downstairs crying. Kelly's upstairs, really just ticked off. And I'm just going, okay, I was in the office working, and I missed what happened here. And Jerry's like, well, she was yelling at me. I'm going like, I'm pretty sure she didn't yell, because I would have heard that, and I didn't hear no yelling. And it's like, he's just going like, there was estrangement. And it was at the life level of the moment where you're just going like, neither of them had any inclination or desire to meet in the middle ground. They would love the other person to come to them, but they in their hurt and offense, it's like, nah, I'm not taking the first step. And you're just going like, okay. So I stopped what I was doing, and I kind of went, all right, we're going to have a little moment here. And it's like, it was trying to find ground of just going like, can you see? Here's how this moment transpired in the other person. Here's how this moment transpired in the other person. Here's what might have really been in their heart. That's not what you felt. That's not how you interpreted it. It's possible that maybe you misinterpreted this. But it's like sort of massaging both sides back to where you recognize, you know what? This person isn't your enemy. Doesn't mean that what they did didn't hurt you. Not trying to say that, nope, you just experienced the wrong emotion. You can't do that to people.
That's right. No, that's absolutely true.
And it was just, but when all of a sudden there was the revelation in each heart that it's like, you know what? The other person does love me. Reconciliation had occurred. And it was just sort of then the walking out of that revelation. And it's like when you think of being reconciled to God, the minute I'm hit by the fact that I know he loves me, it does seem to transcend my rap sheet of rights or wrong.
Yep.
Or perhaps
my frustrations.
My perceived rap sheet on God of what he hasn't done right.
Absolutely.
When there's the revelation of that, all of a sudden you're joined again. And you think of God.
And it may take time for emotions to drain out. Don't you find
yes,
that
it does.
True?
Yeah, yeah,
it does. Because, I mean, you've been in a betrayal fight and yumruck, you're in and you got all this emotion stuff. And, yeah, when you finally start seeing through it, I know when Sarah and I have had some of those kind of, you know, knock down, drag out things. And you go, okay, we're cool. We're going to do that. But the emotions still hang on a little bit.
Yeah. You know what I got for Father's Day? I got the best gift on planet Earth.
No, I did. But go ahead.
No, I got the best gift on planet Earth. From my wife, I got a coupon. That's get out of the doghouse free.
Wow. Are you often in the doghouse?
Yes.
I thought you were cat people.
Well, I'm in the doghouse. You might be a cat person, but I'm in the doghouse. And I sat there going like, oh, this is like Willy Wonka's golden, you know, ticket. This is amazing. It's like, does this thing really work? Could I actually cut this out? And it right at that moment that I am totally moved out of the house into the emotional doghouse,
yeah.
Could I actually give this coupon?
Yep.
And it would work?
Does it?
And you know what?
I haven't needed it yet?
No, I've needed it. But I did place a value on this. And I thought, use this for the really big ones. It's a little doghouse. It's little. It's kind of like in hockey when you get penalty.
I don't want to waste this on
yeah.
a little deal.
Yeah, I don't want to waste this on a little one. But I sat there, and Kelly and I joke about it, because it's like, honey, you know, as nice as this concept really is, I have this sneaking hunch that it's not real. Because if I just present this coupon to you, your emotions are really going to just instantly change because I got a coupon that says get out of jail free card. And I do think that it, you know.
Well, the emotions take a while, but she could definitely say, okay, I'm not pushing this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, she could make a choice.
I find for Sarah and I, and a lot of other, it's the next act of just doing something kind, gracious, that begins to open the door back into the affection, even after the deal. Like, You know, I'll do something she normally does around the house. She'll come home and it'll be done. And then she does something kind of sweet for me. And then that emotion all comes back again. But it does take a little, even after you've fixed the problem and owned it and said you're sorry and all that.
It doesn't restore instant intimacy.
It doesn't. It takes a little bit of some positive stuff, just showing each other that you care. I know one of the interesting things that I recognize about 7-8 years into my marriage. Because I thought, you know, growing up the legalist Pharisee I grew up in, all the other stuff you say at your wedding, the only one that really matters is you can't divorce her and you can't have sex with anybody else. Those are the only two. Nothing else really matters. Those are the ones you got to get right. But I was just focusing on some of the things that we were going through at the time in our marriage and realized one of the things I promised to Sarah is that I would cherish her all the days of my life. Now, we wrote our own vows, so I only have me to blame for that. But I realized that I wasn't cherishing her all the days of my life. I mean, to me, that means kind of every day, how is it that I cherish Sarah? How is it that I let her know that I cherish her? And that has done wonders for, I think, both of us. Done wonders for me to just think about. Every day I don't try and think about it, but I've gotten a lot better over time of just when I'm thinking about her, going, boy, what could I do today to let her know I cherish her? And it isn't always, you know, buying her flowers and cards and candy and things like that. Sometimes it's, you know, doing dishes and getting that honeydew project that's been hanging on forever. Sometimes it's those things. But it's, I just think that's what heals a relationship with people. It's not just addressing the negative. It's rebuilding from a positive platform. You're important to me. You matter to me. And if you're hurt.
Yeah, it's investing.
I'm a part of that.
In them. And what they value, even if it like doesn't register on your list, understanding what matters in their world and speaking their language
That
they understand that. I mean, I think people get into real ruts of, well, I'm working so hard. It's like, yeah, you're speaking Russian, they're speaking French, neither of you is communicating. But it's not for a lack of passionate trying. It's just, yeah. Is it focused in a way that's being received well?
And would that it were French and Russian. Because normally it's English, but the words and the emotions aren't meaning the same thing at all.
One little last thought. You know, the whole idea of, you know, God's heart when he looks down on planet Earth, it doesn't make sense to me, the whole, he just wants his Christian children to get along. The others don't matter. They go ahead, kill yourselves.
We get to hate them too.
The way the inbredness of religion kind of basically circles the wagons, and this is the group in which we'll express love. Everyone else is the enemy. You just go like, gosh, a real understanding of the love of this Father and the depth and truth of this gospel and how it gets played out. It's got to kind of erase those lines that we draw. I mean, I think it's just as important not to love my Christian brethren.
Oh, absolutely.
As it is to simply love. And if I looked at the people around me as children, whether they know it or not, of God's that he treasures just as much as he treasures me and I valued them as such, I think the world would be a different place. I think we would, but I think we tend to look through our rules at everyone else and we decide whether they're lovely or not.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's up with that?
Well, I had somebody put an interesting spin last week on the phrase, you know, love, you know, go the second mile with if your enemy asks you to take his cloak or walk with him a mile, go with him too, kind of that whole second mile deal. And they were just projecting what Jesus might be thinking in a moment like that. When you look at just at rules, oh, great, they asked me one, I got to go two. And the comment was, what would happen the second mile? When you're going beyond what you need to do, what kind of conversation happens between you and your enemy or you and your... And I thought, boy, that's a great way to look at it. Not just another rule to follow, but when you've gone beyond what's expected to you of you, that really opens the door to friendship and relationship. And when you've just done what somebody had the right to make you do, nothing happens there. I thought, what a cute spin on Jesus saying,
well,
go the extra
mile.
Talk
about two different roads you're walking down. If one guy is just going like, all right, well, I'm done in another mile. That's still the first mile.
It is.
That's just a new expectation that has nothing to do with valuing the even why I'm walking beyond this. And I do think that it's like, gosh, if we just simply embraced the dynamic that, you know what, God is probably the only capable judge in virtually every situation.
I'd pretty much say that must be true.
And so if really it's important to decide between who's right and who's wrong, and what's right and what's wrong, and he's really the only capable one to do that, if I recognize that is his domain, I'm not very good at it. If I try, I'm probably not going to get it quite right the way he would see it. And I just sort of give up the energy of having to do that function, and I just sort of say, well, that's his. But what is my domain? I'm going to love the people around me. I'm not going to decide whether they're right or wrong. I'm going to love them. And I'm going to let him decide the right and the wrong and the what's up with the, but I don't have to decide whether it's right to love you.
Exactly.
Is there ever a time it's not right to love you?
Or that my loving you means I must conform you to my way of seeing things. That's, I think, where religion uses love as a weapon.
Yeah.
And when we talk about loving, it's not that we don't care who's right or wrong, because I know some people I love deeply that I know are wrong. It's not even for me to judge whether they're wrong or not. Where they live, what they're doing is just wrong by the most generous interpretations of God's revelation. But it doesn't change my love for them, my desire to take an interest in them, and see what God does out of the relationship. It just doesn't matter. That loving them is more important. Caring about them is the conduit of the kingdom. It's not getting truth in their face before they're ready to hear it. It's loving them in a way that says, you're important to me, I care about you. That alone, just generous acts of kindness, I think will open all the doors. People say, I don't know anybody, I don't have any connection with the world, I have any connection with believers, blah, blah. Just when you take an interest in people and you show them that you care, you're going to have to beat them away with a stick, because the world is hungry for that. I just don't think we have a world in which people feel cared about by the way others act.
Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.